Can I ask you to turn your Bibles to Psalm 32? Psalm 32. And we thought this morning about the freedom, the freeness of the life, the eternal life that was offered by Jesus Christ. It's my privilege to be able to remind you of the freeness of the forgiveness that is offered by Jesus Christ. One man writes about the account that we've read, that David, Bathsheba, Uriah, and then Nathan coming. He talks about all of that. And he simply says that we should shudder with joy when we remember what our God does with our sin. We should shudder with joy. And I don't know about you. There are many things that stir me into action, but shuddering with joy is something that, if I'm honest, I don't see a lot of. And if I'm honest, I'm not sure I see a lot of. But shudder with joy is what David does. Blessed is he whose transgression is forgiven, whose sin is covered. As awful as sin is, it can be dealt with wonderfully. As awful as sin is, it can be dealt with wonderfully. Now, David uses three words in Psalm 32 to talk about the totality of sin that he finds in himself. You see those three words, verses 1 and 2? Transgression, sin, and iniquity. He repeats them later on. They're engraved on his mind. He can't get away from them. He knows them. He's lived them. He's felt them. Transgression is about parents. You know what this is like when you see your child do the exact opposite of what you want them to do. Don't touch that. Transgression is rebellion. Sin is the offence that is given in the turning away. Not the drifting away, but the turning away. The deliberate turning away. And iniquity is about the stain that is left, the distortion of the soul. And it's characterised by one man puts it, the absence of respect for the divine will. The absence of respect for the divine will. And here David is plunking those three characteristics firmly in his own lap. Transgression, sin, iniquity. And when we read 2 Samuel 11, we're content with that, aren't we? So you should, David. So you should. If 2 Samuel 11 was televised and your children were watching, you'd turn it off, wouldn't you? It's a disgusting scene. But David here isn't talking about what is seen. He's talking about what was going on inside while it was happening. When Nathan confronts him, twice Nathan uses the word despised. The Lord confronted. You despised the Lord's command and you despised the Lord. That's what was going on really in this transgression, this sin, this iniquity. That's what was going on. Sin is awful. Particularly when you appreciate that sin is against God. It's a relational issue. It's not just that David's done something that's not very nice. It's that this rebellion, this turning away, this defiance of the divine will is against a good God who has bestowed upon him so much. And part of God's job through the prophet Nathan is to remind him of what he has given him and given and given and would have given. Sin is awful. But as awful as sin is, it can be dealt with wonderfully. Christian, it is possible, isn't it, to think that what we have done, and when we appreciate just even a little bit of the attitude that was behind it, what we have said or not said, and we've understood what's gone on in the heart, it's possible to despair. And that's not unhealthy. But it's not the last word. Because when David talks about transgression, he talks about transgression being forgiven. When he talks about sin, he talks about it being covered. Not covered in the sense of, you know, you move a coffee table over a patch in the carpet because there's a coffee stain and you don't want someone to see it. It's not a hiding of something. It's a covering. It's a dealing with. It's a dealing with. Like you would cover a debt. You pay a debt off. It's dealt with. He talks about iniquity not being imputed. It's no longer his. As awful as sin is, it can be dealt with wonderfully. Have a look at the last line of verse 2. This is important. And in whose spirit there is no deceit. Now, when we read 2 Samuel 11, we read deceit shot through it, don't we? David deceived everybody possible just to cover up his tracks. Deceit was just oozing out of him. But here he's talking about something different. He's talking about the characteristic of confession to God. When there is no deceit, when there's no longer any hiding or disguising or running, when it's just honest confession to God, then transgression is forgiven. Then sin is covered. Then iniquity is dealt with completely. When David uttered those words, "I have sinned against the Lord," in Hebrew he said two words, just two words. And instantly, Nathan responds. Words of forgiveness. As awful as sin is, it can be dealt with wonderfully. The spirit of no deceit, the broken and contrite heart, the poor in spirit as Christ would speak of, is a good sign of a thoroughly broken spirit. One who knows that transgression and sin and iniquity runs deep. And who knows that it has to be God who deals with it. As awful as sin is, it can be dealt with wonderfully. You can probably tell from the outline of the screen there's more to come, Christian. That may be all you need to hear. That may be all you need to hear. Have you stayed away? Not from gatherings like this, but have you stayed away from God because you are fearful that he will not forgive? That you're fearful because you're coming to him again for a very similar thing, or even identical to what you've been forgiven of in the past. That you're fearful that he'll just run out of patience and write you off. Screw the truths of verses 1 and 2 into your head. And go and do business with God. As awful as sin is, it can be dealt with wonderfully. That's good news. If, like David, you've stayed silent, as awful as our sin is, we can stay silent. You see verse 3 and verse 4, when I kept silent, he's looking back now on his behaviour, but when I kept silent, my bones grew old and through my groaning all the day long. For day and night your hand was heavy upon me. Now you and I could get very self-righteous. How dare David act like that and then try and run away from God? How stupid was he? This is the God who chose him as a shepherd boy and made him become king of Israel with wonderful promises for an eternal throne. What a fool he's been. We could take that line. But is it not true that you and I have received blessing upon blessing, Christian? And is it not true that there are times when we would gladly avoid God? What we have done, what we've said, what we've loved to do, what we've loved to say in defiance against God has captivated us somehow. And we would rather have that than him. As awful as our sin is, we can stay silent. I'm going to ask you some questions I've asked you on at least one occasion before. This psalm is about confession. What were the last three things that you've confessed to God? I don't want you to tell me, but you need to be honest. What are the last three things you've confessed to God? You got them? Now, how far back do you have to go to get number three? It's possible you have to go a long way back because actually you're a wonderful person. It's more possible that you're struggling to get number three because actually confession is not a regular feature of our Christian life. In other words, we sin and we stay silent. Silent in the sense of confession to God. We sin and we stay silent. It's part of the rebellion that we keep it quiet. It's part of the defiance of the divine will that we want to keep it to ourselves. As awful as our sin is, we can stay silent. There are some things we need to appreciate, and I think there are 5 or 6 points coming up. We're going to deal with them quickly, okay? So don't lose heart in that sense. But these are wonderful. And they should do you good. And if you are staying away from God, let them melt you to come back. And if you ever are tempted to stay away from God, run to Psalm 32. And whether you remember this sermon or not, I don't care. But open your mouth in confession. The dealing with sin, verse 5 tells us, can come after fatherly discipline. The time gap between David killing Uriah and Nathan coming to see him, somewhere there was long enough for Bathsheba, her pregnancy to go full term and the baby to be born. So we could be talking, it could be a year. It could be the baby could be a few months old by the time Nathan comes. That's a bit slow on God's case, isn't it? He took his time on that one, didn't he? David, the king of Israel, has covered his tracks in a gruesome sin. He's tried to trick Uriah to sleep with his wife so that when he sees that she's pregnant, he's convinced the baby's his. But there's too much honor running through his blood, so he doesn't sleep with his own wife. And in the end, David's got one option, and that is to kill him. And the time that elapses, it seems as if God's nowhere to be found. David's got away with it. She's now married to him in the palace. Baby is born. Is that it? And Nathan does a wonderful job. Wonderful job. We'll look at that in a moment. But we see from what David writes next that while it took some time for God to send Nathan, God was still speaking. Speaking through the experience of David in a broken conscience and a guilty soul. Before Nathan ever spoke, David writes of his before Nathan ever speaks, this is the experience that David had. Verse 3. When I kept silent, my bones grew old through my groaning all the day long. For day and night your hand was heavy upon me. My vitality was turned into the drought of summer. Physical illness, possibly. Spiritual weakness and conviction, probably. Both, likely. What's the point? The disciplining hand of a loving father. Things are not good. Things are not well. The peace, the joy, the delight of coming to my temple, these things are being withdrawn from you, that you may feel and know that things are not good. We need to be careful when we're reading the providence of God. Very often selfishness rather than wisdom dictates how we read it. But joy is the reasonable position of the Christian. And if there is not joy, it could be that there is sin. If there is not joy, it could be that there is sin to be confessed. Now David sees that groaning, the bones growing old. He sees that heavy weight. He appreciates that from hindsight, because God takes him to be again in his right mind, and he's able to look back and think, yeah, I can understand why I was like that then. But where there is joylessness, Christian, where there is weariness, it could be, there are other factors, but it could be that there is sin to be confessed. The dealing with sin can come after fatherly discipline. And then there's this, back to 2 Samuel, this wonderful encounter with Nathan. He tells him this story that just has David's blood boiling. How dare that man? You are the man, David. But yet, while David was silent and God was silent, God was still speaking. Heavy hand. And then this probing story comes. Verse 5 is written, looking back over what Nathan has said and what has gone on in his heart. I acknowledged my sin to you. What grace there is in that. Here is a man who sinned, silently kept it to himself, covered all his tracks, and now is rejoicing again that he's been able to speak of it in confession to God. What grace there is in that. My iniquity I have not hidden. we're back to this lack of deceit in verse 2. There's this openness. I will say, I'll confess my transgressions to the Lord. And you forgave the iniquity of my sin. The dealing with sin can come after fatherly discipline. The dealing with sin, verse 6, unites us to others. He talks in verse 6. You see what comes next? For this cause, everyone who is godly shall pray to you in a time when you may be found. For what cause? For the cause of confession. He knows that others will have to and will join him as they open their mouths with no deceit in their heart. Forgive me. And so David is anticipating this forgiven community. People who have cried to God for forgiveness, being granted it fully and freely. And he and they are united together. And that's our privilege as a church, to be able to meet together, bound together with that forgiveness. It's our privilege to know of the church elsewhere, where we are bound as brothers and sisters in Christ, forgiven. Christ has much to say about the forgiveness that we must grant to one another. Because we're forgiven. Is it possible that while you have perhaps nothing in your mind that you know of to confess to God, is it possible that this united to one another, you have forgiveness to express to someone else, or forgiveness to ask for from someone else? The dealing with sin unites us with others, verse 6. The dealing with sin gives us a foundational security. Gives us a foundational security. That's the last part of verse 6 and verse 7 together. Surely in a flood of great waters they shall not come near him. You are my hiding place. You shall preserve me from trouble. You shall surround me with songs of deliverance. If you forgive me, my life will be smooth. No. Whatever my life brings, you will be my rock, my refuge, my shelter, always. Do you get it? Because he forgives sin, transgression, and iniquity, there is nothing else that can shake us to the core. There's nothing else that will come that will be outside of his eye. Nothing else that is greater that will weaken his hand. There is this foundational security. J.C. Ryle puts it like this. There is a place of many tears. That's this life here. You know that, don't you? But while we walk through the place of many tears, we are held and kept. There is this foundational security to those who are forgiven by God. They are united to him now. And nothing. Nothing will separate us from him. It's in the many afflictions that the Lord delivers us. Not from them. It's why we go through the valley of the shadow of death. That we know he is with us. Do you see? Foundational security. The dealing with sin evokes a humble spirit. Verses 8 and 9 is God talking to the forgiven. I'll instruct you and teach you in the way you should go. I'll guide you with my eye. Don't be like the horse or the mule, which has no understanding, which must be harnessed with bit and bridle, sorry, else they will not come near you. Don't be so stubborn. And to the one who is known the freshness of forgiveness. That's not a hard call to listen to, is it? The God who has dealt with us in mercy and grace says, now come and listen to me and follow me in the way. That's not difficult, is it? And that's what he's asking, commanding. The humble spirit that is there in us, because we're forgiven by a great God, we gladly follow. Alan White spoke to us last week, didn't he, about the necessity of wholehearted obedience. Well, here's the grounds. When we're forgiven, we gladly obey. God's dealing with our sin evokes a humble spirit in us. Which means when we find ourselves being harsh with one another, when we find ourselves being forgetful of how great our God is, we've probably lost our way. The dealing with sin evokes a humble spirit. The dealing with sin distinguishes the forgiven. Verse 10. Many sorrows shall be to the wicked, but he who trusts in the Lord, mercy shall surround him. Now this is not being triumphalistic. Okay, a child competes on sports day and beats his friends in a race and turns around and sticks his tongue out and says, I beat you. That's not the spirit of this verse. Many sorrows shall be to the wicked. You can't say that with triumphalistic spirit, can you? But he trusts in the Lord. He has received forgiveness freely given by God. Mercy shall surround him. And the point of that verse is simply that there are two groups of people. You know that, don't you? Two groups. And you belong to one Christian. You are not now as you once were. Different now. And while you are not now as you once will be, there is a soberness, isn't there? That we are as we are by the grace of God. And there are others yet who still need to hear, who still do not know the humbling, fatherly forgiveness of our God. We struggle sometimes, don't we, with sharing our faith. I wonder if we simply spoke about the joy of particular sins forgiven. What difference would that make? If we shared about the genuine bondage that was there and now is no longer there. The peace that passes all understanding. Testify to what God has done. Dealing with sin distinguishes the forgiven. And lastly, you've done very well. Keep with me. The dealing with sin bestows honour on the forgiven. He uses two words to describe God's people. Can you see them in verse 11? He uses two words to describe God's people. Be glad in the Lord and rejoice, you righteous. Here is a man who characterized himself with transgression, sin, and iniquity. There's a heavy load. And now he says, righteous. He doesn't stop there. Shout for joy, All you upright in heart. Upright in heart. He's just described himself as devious, as deceitful, as defiant. Upright in heart. Because of what God has done, we are, at the very core of our beings, different now. And so this man who is guilty of filth calls to everyone who trusts in the Lord, righteous, upright in heart, not because he's perfect and he thinks you're perfect, but because when the Lord calls us to confession, we come. And when the Lord speaks words of forgiveness, we receive. And when God asks us, commands us to follow him, we follow. Always needing forgiveness, which is always graciously given by a great God. Do we shudder with joy? On such love, my soul still ponder. Love so great, so rich, so free. Say, while lost in holy wonder, why such love to me? That's a good start. That's a good start. You may be unmoved. You may get the words here, they may be going in there, but you may be unmoved. That's okay. As long as you don't stay there. As long as this week you come before your God and say that the issues of forgiveness and confession mean little. And you want them to mean much. That the love that he bestows on people like you and I, you find your heart unmoved. But you want it to be moved. Plead with you. Don't play with confession of sin. I urge you. Go to the God who has promised by history and declaration to deal with your sin. And wonderfully so.